Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on energy when we come back. You know, those who already walk submissively will say that there's no cause for alarm, but submissiveness is not our heritage. The First Amendment was designed to allow rebellion to remain as our heritage. The Constitution was designed to keep government off the backs of the people. The Bill of Rights was added to keep the precincts of belief and expression of the press, of political and social activities free from government surveillance. Now, you know, I wished I'd have thought of that, but that quotation comes from Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas. That's right, a Supreme Court justice said that. Now, our princes and our politicians beller in the halls of Congress for more taxes, more spending, and more gun control, but we haven't heard anything intelligent come out of a politician's mouth in more than 75 years. That's why I contend that the only real reason, logic, or common sense left in America comes from our courts. It doesn't come from our political process, our politicians, our lawyers, or our bureaucrats. Old Mayor Rothschild summed it up with a flair when he said, "You give me the money power, and I care not who makes the laws." Well, let me echo that by saying, "You give me the judicial power, and I care not who makes the laws either," because the real power in America is in our courts. It's not in our politics. Now, if you'd like to tap into that power of the courts, then call me here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. Now, our school, Courtroom Strategy and Procedure, is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? All right, we've been talking about energy. Last time we took a look at peak oil. That's a politically contrived term to shut off the oil supplies and raise the prices. And there's an overall game plan, remember, that overall game plan. It's called the New World Order. It's called Global 2000. It deals with a population reduction over time, and it deals with a complete reordering of the world's geopolitical system so that it can be governed from the top down in a communist dictatorship. And the opposite to that now is the Ten Commandments, which is a bottom-up designed system whereby wealth is held in the hands of many people at the bottom as opposed to a few hands at the top. And I pointed out to you last time that in America we used to be able to go out and drill for oil. You can't anymore. You don't have the money for it. Now there's 5 major oil companies in the world. These 5 major oil companies, for practical purposes, control the entire oil trade, and they control it worldwide. That wasn't always the case up until about 1960, maybe 1970. We used to have hundreds, even thousands of little oil companies, little people in Texas that were their own oil companies. They drilled for oil. They'd have 10, 15 wells, something like that. Some of them actually refined and made their own gasoline. In fact, I had a guy in here in class that was making his own gasoline as recently as 1990. He had 15 little convenience stores, and he was buying the ingredients for gasoline, making the gasoline himself, and selling it. Of course, they put him out of business. That's competition. And competition is bad for big business. They don't like that. Now, there's another competitive force out here in the field of energy, and it's called nuclear power. Nuclear power. the genie that got out of the jar in 1945 is a source of electric power. In fact, it's about 20% of our electrical energy here in the United States. Now, the biggest use of energy that we have is electricity. I mean, we burn a lot of gasoline, and there's a lot of talk, you know, about the price of gasoline and so on. But if you take all of the petroleum that we use here in the United States and you compare that to the amount of electrical energy that we use, it pales in comparison. So your biggest need for energy on a day-to-day basis is, believe it or not, just the electric switch that you flip on to go to the bathroom. Every time you walk into a room, you flip a switch and you get electricity. Well, this electrical power, it powers industry. I mean, we're not running steam-powered plants anymore to run our industries. We have electric motors that do all of that. So all of industry is dependent upon electricity. And nuclear power worldwide, the status and outlook is a report that comes from www.iaea.org. That's the International Atomic Energy. It's the UN organization that looks after and keeps track of nuclear energy around the world. They're the guys that inspect, make sure that you're not violating the various treaties, you know, that have been engaged in. Like the IAEA is constantly monitoring Iran and their nuclear program. Now, as of the 23rd of October in 2007, nuclear power's prominence as a major energy source will continue over the next several decades. That's according to new projections made by the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, which has just published a new report called Energy, Electricity, and Nuclear Power for the period up to 2030. The IAEA makes two annual projections concerning the growth of nuclear power, a low and a high. The low projection assumes that all nuclear capacity that is currently under construction is or firmly in the development pipeline gets completed and attached to the grid, but no other capacity is added. In this low projection, there would be growth in capacity from 370 billion kilowatts to at the end of 2006 to 447 billion in 2030. Now, those are called gigawatts. A gigawatt equals 1,000 megawatts, and that equals 1 billion watts. So that's a lot of wattage. Now, in the IAEA's high projection, which adds in additional reasonable and promising projects and plans, global nuclear capacity is estimated to rise to 679 gigawatts in 2030, and that would be an average growth rate of about 2.5% a year. Our job is not so much to predict the future, but to prepare for it, explains the IAEA's Alan McDonald, nuclear energy analyst. And to that end, we update each year a high and a low projection to establish the range of uncertainty that we ought to be prepared for. Nuclear power's share of worldwide electricity production rose from less than 1% in 1960 to 16% in 1986, and that percentage has held essentially constant in the 21 years since 1986. Nuclear electricity generation has grown steadily at the same pace as overall global electricity generation. At the close of 2006, nuclear provided about 15% of total electricity worldwide. The IAEA's other key findings as of the end of 2006 are elaborated below. There are now 435 operating nuclear reactors around the world, and 29 more were under construction. The United States had the most with 103 operating units. France was next with 59. Japan followed with 55. Plus one more under construction, and Russia had 31 operating and seven more under construction. Of the 30 countries with nuclear power, the percentage of electricity supplied by nuclear energy ranged widely, from a high of 78% in France to 54% in Belgium, 39% in the Republic of Korea, 37% in Switzerland, 30% in Japan, 19% in the United States, 16% in Russia, and 4% in South Africa, 2% in China. Now, the present nuclear power plant expansion is centered in Asia. Half of the 29 units under construction at the end of 2006 were in Asia. 26 of the last 36 reactors to have been connected to the grid have been in Asia. India currently gets less than 3% of its electricity from nuclear power, but at the end of 2006 it had one quarter of the nuclear construction in the world, 7 of the world's 29 reactors that were under construction. India's plans are even more impressive. It calls for an 8-fold increase by 2022 to 10% of their electricity supply and a 75% or 75-fold increase by 2052 to reach 26% of the electricity supply. A 75-fold increase works out to an average of 9.4% per year, about the same as average global nuclear growth from 1970 through 2004, so it's hardly unprecedented. China is experiencing huge energy growth and is trying to expand every ounce it can, including nuclear power. It has 4 reactors under construction and plans a nearly 5-fold expansion by just 2020. Because China is growing so fast, this would still amount to only 4% of total electricity. Russia had 31 operating reactors, 5 under construction, and significant expansion plans. And there's a lot of discussion in Russia of becoming a full fuel service provider, including services like leasing fuel, reprocessing spent fuel for countries that are interested, and even leasing reactors. Now, Japan had 55 reactors in operation, 1 under construction, and plans to increase nuclear power's share of electricity from 30% in 2006 to more than 40% within the next decade. South Korea connected its 20th reactor just last year. It has another under construction, and it has broken ground to start building 2 more. Nuclear power already supplies 39% of its electricity. Europe is a good example of one size does not fit all. Altogether, it had 166 reactors in operation and 6 under construction. But there are several nuclear prohibition countries like Austria, Italy, Denmark, and Ireland. And there are nuclear phase-out countries like Germany and Belgium. There are also nuclear expansion programs in Finland, France, Bulgaria, and the Ukraine. Finland started construction in 2005, which is the first new Western European construction since 1991. France plans to start its next plant in 2007. Several countries with nuclear power are still pondering future plans. The United Kingdom, with 19 operating plants, many of which are relatively old, had been the most uncertain until recently, although a final policy decision on nuclear power will await the results of a public consultation, consultation now underway. And a white paper on energy published in May of 2007 concluded that, having reviewed the evidence and information available, we believe that the advantages of new nuclear power outweigh the disadvantages, and that the disadvantages can be effectively managed. On this basis, the government's preliminary view is that it is in the public's interest to give the private sector the option of investing in new nuclear power stations. Now, the United States had 103 reactors, providing 19% of the country's electricity. For the last few decades, the main developments have been improved capacity factors and power increases at existing plants and license renewals. Currently, 48 reactors have already received 20-year renewals, so their licensed lifetimes are 60 years. Altogether, 3/4 of the U.S. reactors either already have license renewals, have applied for them, or have stated their intention to apply. There have been a lot of announced intentions, about 30 new reactors worth, And the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is now reviewing 4 early site permit applications. For further information, just contact the IAEA Division of Public Information. Remember this article now. Comes from the IAEA. This is the international, well, they call this thing the International Atomic Energy Agency. Now that's a pretty positive article. Now you'll notice here in the United States, we haven't built any nuclear power plants since Three Mile Island. And people here in this country, you know, are paranoid over nuclear power. They don't want it. I gotta ask the question, why not? Well, because of Three Mile Island. So what? Well, they're dangerous. Listen, if you take the number of people that have been killed in nuclear accidents around the world from 1945 to the present, it wouldn't equal the people killed in one coal mine accident. I mean, it's a totally irrational fear if you're just talking about the loss of life. If you're talking about Chernobyl, it was a poorly designed plant. It's the only one that went haywire. And it's got a poor design to it. And those graphite plants, they've said, you know, are bad design. We don't have any of those here. And you're not going to change anything that's going on in Russia or anyplace else. So that's not even a consideration if you look at it pragmatically. Now, I'm not here as an advocate for energy sources. I'm here as a reporter to tell you that there's a certain facts that probably you ought to have in order to make an intelligent decision. Now you'll notice that around the world, other countries not only have nuclear power, but are expanding it. So why aren't they paranoid? How come the people in France getting 80% of their energy, their electrical energy from nuclear power, how come they don't have a problem disposing of the nuclear waste like we have here in America? And how come the people in Japan aren't paranoid over nuclear power like Three Mile Island? Well, there's a driving force behind those two economies. See, they don't have any oil. And they don't have a whole lot of coal. And they have to have electricity, just like everybody else. They have to figure out, well, how are we going to do it? Now, somebody comes along and says, well, you know, we could have renewable energy. Well, we're coming to that. But renewable energy has some drawbacks that maybe you hadn't heard about. I mean, I just want to point out that there's, you know, pros and cons on both sides. In this article, though, did you see this little section in here that said Russia had 31 operating reactors, 5 more under construction, so they didn't learn anything from Chernobyl, evidently, and significant expansion plans. So even though they had the world's worst accident, which I'll report on here in a little bit, see if we can get that into perspective, they are expanding nuclear power in spite of the fact that they're the world's number 2 producer of petroleum. There's an economic ingredient in here. You see, nuclear power is cheap and petroleum is expensive. And there's a downside to coal. Now, we seem to experience and we seem to accept the acid rain and the damage that is caused by coal-fired power plants. We don't have any complaints about that at all. And those coal-fired power plants kill thousands of people here in the United States every year. That's right. They kill them from disease. And as long as people are dying from emphysema, that's all right. But my God, we just can't have them dying, you know, from nuclear exposure to radiation. Or exposure to radiation. And it looks like to me that people are just as dead, whether they die from radiation or they die from lung disease. Just as an aside here. But notice that the Russians over here are expanding, and there's a lot of discussion in Russia of becoming a full fuel service provider, including services like leasing fuel and reprocessing the spent fuel for countries that are interested. I want to underline reprocessing the spent fuel. See, we got a mountain out here in Nevada. It's called Yucca Mountain, and they want to dispose of the spent fuel out at Yucca Mountain. As a solution to the problem, reprocessing it and using it over and over and over and over and over again evidently hasn't hit anybody's mind here in this country. Does it entered your mind yet that evidently the French, the Japanese, and the Russians have solved the problem of where do you store the spent fuel? It's called reprocessing. Did you know that that fuel is usable again and again and again? It needs to be reprocessed. Now, while we're over here talking about this Yucca Mountain thing and the politics behind it, has it ever occurred to you that we don't want nuclear power in this country for some other reason other than the safety issue? See, they keep talking about the safety of nuclear power. Nobody was killed at Three Mile Island, and what little bit of radiation leaked out of it over there was minuscule. There's been no lasting effects from it except for the political fallout. And this is, it just goes to show you what propaganda can do. Now, 53% of America's electrical energy comes from coal. We'll talk about coal a little bit later. Now, we have a lot of coal in this country. We have, at the rate that we're using coal right now, we can easily run 666 years on coal. We don't need any nuclear power. We don't need any petroleum or gas power. Hell, we could generate all of our electricity with coal if you want to, and do it for hundreds of years. And it provides jobs, and it keeps the trains running and one thing and another. And I'm not sitting here telling you that coal is bad, but there's a byproduct that comes from coal called acid rain. Now, they're constantly talking about the CO2, and I mentioned to you in the last program, or last week, that CO2 coming from the burning of these fossil fuels is actually a good thing. They tell you it's bad, but they lie a lot. And I say they, that's the government and industry, lie to you constantly. And they've got a good purpose behind it, I mean, after all this money. There's no better reason to lie than money that I can think of. And there's a lot of money to be made, and there's a lot of lying going on, and the lying that's going on is done for money, which is probably the best reason to lie, is over money. But the moral to the story is that there's a worse problem that comes from this coal burning. It's called acid rain, and it's killing millions of trees east of the Mississippi River, where you've got most of the coal-fired power plants that are affecting your hardwood forests out there. Now, I would contend that the destruction of your hardwood forests is a worse ecological or environmental problem than nuclear power. Remember that nuclear power is clean. When you get all through with nuclear power, all you've got left over is heat, which is dissipated in water. And there's a lot of things that could be done with that heat that aren't being done, that I would contend probably ought to be done, ought to be used. And the nuclear power over there doesn't have any acid rain. And it doesn't kill your hardwood forests. It's cheaper than coal. It's cheaper than oil. And it solves your balance of payments problem with all of this imported petroleum, all of this imported energy. I mean, there's just 55 good reasons why. And that's why these other countries around the world are digging their heels in and going after nuclear power, because it's cheap, it's clean, and it requires massive technology. I mean, building nuclear power plants is the toughest power plant to build. They're hard to get approved. They're much more technologically advanced. I mean, anybody can, you know, light a fire under a lump of coal and boil some water and run a turbine. But to do that with a nuclear power plant, now that takes some doing. And that's why not everybody in the world's doing that. Not everybody in the world has the nuclear technology to do that. So you don't have that in Rwanda, in Egypt, and in other countries. And in those countries that do have it, you'll notice that they're digging in and they're going after it. So I just thought I'd point that out to you, that the countries that have nuclear power, they're able to dispose of their nuclear waste by reprocessing it. Now, let me give you a little piece here. In the United States, This comes from NPR. That's our national public radio. Here's a little piece, just one sentence. It says, Morning Edition, August 21st, 2007. France gets 80% of its electricity from nuclear power. Once a nuclear plant is built and running, the power station doesn't emit greenhouse gases. But as summers in Europe get hotter, an unexpected hitch has emerged. Many French reactors have had trouble operating during hot spells. Now, if you're listening to the National Public Radio and you hear that little blurb come out, I selected it out of a big pile of blurbs here, and you say to yourself, oh, well, nuclear power doesn't work because you can't cool the power plants off. Well, that's preposterous poppycock. Excuse me, boys and girls, but there are several hundred nuclear power plants operating around the world. Why is it that the French are having a problem with their cooling and the Japanese don't? I mean, come on here. What in the hell are we talking about? There's a constant propaganda blitz against nuclear power. And if NPR or CBS or NBC or the powers that be, the communications media, if they haven't got anything to say, they put in a little blurb like that which knocks nuclear power. There are certain things that we knock, like racism, you know. We got to have these little blurbs constantly. And so there's a little blurb. And what that does is that it reinforces your fear of nuclear power. And we keep reinforcing your fear of nuclear power for a reason. We don't want nuclear power in the United States. Who is this we that doesn't want nuclear power? All of the people that profit from coal and petroleum and other sources of energy. Nuclear power is a competitor. We don't want it. And I say we. Now let's start thinking pragmatically here. Let's suppose that you're in the coal business. And you're the Peabody Coal Company and you make billions and billions. You make more money, you know, than you know what to do with. It's obscene. All right. And you're making all this money. And somebody comes along and says, well, now look, Mr. Peabody, there's a cheaper energy source out here called nuclear energy. And we should phase out all of this coal that you own so much of, Mr. Peabody, and phase in nuclear energy, which you don't have any of and not very likely to produce any. You don't have any uranium mines and you don't have any technology. And this is a cleaner, neater, better source of energy than coal and doesn't have any acid rain connected with it. Now, let me ask you this. Would you receive that message and say, oh, yes, of course, I should put myself out of business. I should close down my coal mines and I should get out and actively promote nuclear power. And then if your answer to that is yes, you get your head right up the middle of your you-know-what again, Bob. You know, there's a status quo that develops in politics. And the status quo says, let's just leave it alone. We're all just the way things are right now. Let's not make any changes. Now, a country like France that doesn't have a lot of coal, doesn't have any oil, and they need electricity, they have to get it somewhere. And somebody says, well, they could get it from solar. Well, the Germans are testing that. I'll report on that a little later on. We'll talk about this solar power. But meanwhile, back here on the farm, you know, you should be thinking about nuclear power because nuclear power, the nuclear power genie got out of the jar in 1945. You're not going to put it back in the jar. And so I'm going to read you another article over here when we take our break. And I'm going to give you the other side to this nuclear thing over here. And it's called the Nuclear Energy Fact Sheet. And it's the other side of nuclear. You know, the IAEA gives you the positive side. Now we'll take a look at this negative side over here when we come back. Hang on. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Remember, it's free. And you can order it by just calling us and asking. That number again is 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give, they don't mean that the authors or the publications that we endorse and recommend will reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour, they may be political, religious, economic, they could be sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans. And their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by us here at the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program, they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions now of the advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about energy. And in this broadcast, we're talking about nuclear energy. Now, this comes from the Nuclear Energy Fact Sheet. If you'd like to get a copy of it, you can go to www.wagingpeace.org. WAGINGPEACE.ORG. And here's what these good folks tell us. They say that an introduction to nuclear energy for civilian purposes. Most early atomic research focused on developing an effective weapon for use in World War II. After the war, the United States government encouraged the development of nuclear energy for peaceful civilian purposes while continuing to develop, test, and deploy new nuclear weapons. The experimental breeder reactor, number one, at a site in Idaho, generated the first electricity from nuclear energy on December the 20th, 1951. 16% of the world's electricity now comes from nuclear energy, 85% of which is concentrated in industrialized countries. A total of 441 nuclear power plants were operating as of February 2003, and there were also 32 nuclear reactors under construction, according to the Nuclear Energy Institute. In the United States alone, there are 103 nuclear power plants, which provide about 20% of the nation's electricity. A new nuclear power plant has not been ordered in this country since 1973. Today, President George W. Bush's energy policy calls for a $15 billion federal subsidy to build 6 or 7 new nuclear power plants. Well, here's how it works. the scientific process behind nuclear energy. Nuclear energy relies on the fact that some elements can be split in a process called fission and will release part of their energy as heat. Because it fissions easily, uranium, U-235, is one of the elements most commonly used to produce nuclear energy. It is generally used in a mixture with uranium-238 and produces plutonium-239 as waste in the process. A nuclear power plant generates electricity like any other steam electric power plant. Water is heated, and the steam from the boiling water turns turbines and generates electricity. The main difference in the various types of steam electric plants is the heat source. The heat source is usually coal, oil, or gas, and it's burned in other power plants to heat the water. Heat from a chain reaction of fissioning uranium-235 boils the water in a nuclear power plant. Some have compared this process to using a cannon to kill a fly. Number two, how it doesn't work. The risks and dangers of nuclear energy. Proliferation risks. Plutonium is a man-made waste product of nuclear fission, which can be used either for fuel in nuclear power plants or for bombs. In the year 2000, an estimated 310 tons, that's 620,000 pounds, of civilian weapons-usable plutonium had been produced. Less than 8 kilograms, about 18 pounds of plutonium, is enough for one Nagasaki-type bomb. This in the year 2000 alone, or thus rather, in the year 2000 alone, enough plutonium was created to make more than 34,000 nuclear weapons. All right, I'm going to pause right there. This group here has a bent on nuclear weaponry. I agree with these people. I think that the development of nuclear energy was a mistake. That mankind lived on this planet for 5,000 years and we got along nicely without nuclear power. We've only had it for, 50, 75 years. And we have already used it to kill people. We're using it to threaten people. It's a bad idea. And I don't think that it's controllable. But boys and girls, the genie is already out of the jar. You see, you're never going to stuff this genie back into the jar. I mean, you can sit there and you can talk and you can call yourself, we're the people for peace. What they call themselves, wagingpeace.org. And that's all well and good. That's fine. But it isn't going to change the fact that the Chinese have the bomb. And the Russians have the bomb. And the Pakistanis and the Indians have the bomb. They've already got it. Now, it would be good if nobody else gets it. But, that probably isn't going to happen either. Meanwhile, back on the farm, the discussion that we're having here is, now that we've got it, now that we have gone over and eaten the forbidden fruit off of the tree, and now that our eyes have been opened, and now we can see the benefits of nuclear power, should we now pretend that it doesn't exist and not use it? Because it does exist, and whether we use it in the United States or not is irrelevant. The people in France are going to continue to use it, and in Russia and in Japan. Now, should we continue to import oil from Saudi Arabia and run an $800 billion a year deficit in our balance of payments? And for how long can that go on? Well, boys and girls, it's already gone on so long that it's bankrupted the nation. So we're already going to go through the bankruptcy process. We've begun that. Now, life goes on, and after bankruptcy, just like in Argentina, life goes on in Argentina after their bankruptcy. It's a traumatic experience to go through bankruptcy. It's a traumatic experience to go through hyperinflation. There's a lot of political consequences. We're going to go through it here in America. The train is on the track. It's already moving at high speed. The switches are all set. Just sit back and relax and enjoy the ride. Here it comes. Get the Vaseline out. Now, when this is over, which it inevitably will, then what are you going to do for the future? And I would suggest that we learn from our mistakes. That trying to import oil from overseas was a mistake. And this thing of outsourcing jobs in a global economy and free trade, that was a mistake. NAFTA was a mistake. GATT was a mistake. And, you know, if you're a businessman and you make mistakes, it puts you out of business. It causes bankruptcy. Well, after you're a businessman who's been through bankruptcy a time or two, and after you've made some of these business mistakes, you know, if you got any moxie at all, then you learn from those mistakes, and then in your new business enterprises in the future, you don't make those. Now, it was a mistake when you stopped using nuclear power. Had you continued on from 1973, and if you'd have continued on and used nuclear power, you would have spent a lot less money importing oil. And if you had made the transition, you would have burned a lot less coal, you'd have saved a lot more trees, you'd have a lot less sulfur dioxide in your streams and ponds in the east, you'd have less ecological damage, and you'd be making more money doing it. And instead of stockpiling all of this plutonium out at Yucca Mountain, why don't you reprocess it in a new fuel and keep using it over and over again? I mean, you know, it's kind of like recycling. When I was a kid, when we bought a bottle of beer, we paid 2 cents, a deposit on the bottle, 2 cents. We didn't just throw the bottle out in a landfill and then complain about the landfill is full. We recycled the bottle. We just kept using it over and over and over again. Same thing with milk bottles. You know, the milkman came. He delivered your milk in bottles. Then you washed your bottles and you put them back out there. And then the milk would be put back in the bottle and brought back over and over and over again. Well, listen, that's not good for the packaging industry. So the packaging industry, you know, they worked hard. They go to the legislatures and they work hard, you know, to compete. And so they persuaded us that this thing of recycling milk in the same bottles over and over again is a bad practice, that we ought to use cardboard cartons, cut down a lot more trees, generate more jobs in the timber industry, and then hire garbage men at BFI to haul that garbage away and store it in a big landfill someplace. And then complain about it because it's full. These are choices, ladies and gentlemen, that we all have to make. And we make these choices, and we've made them. Some of them weren't so good. Looks like to me that recycling the beer in the bottles and the milk in the bottles is a better program. And somebody said, well, it's not convenient. Well, okay. So it's not convenient. It's the way life is. Life is filled with work, like making the bed every day. It's not convenient. Not convenient. And taking the garbage out every day. It's another inconvenience. But the alternative to not taking the garbage out would be to pile it up in the kitchen until the kitchen is full, and then boring tunnels through the garbage from the sink to the table to the door so that you can walk in and out of the kitchen. I mean, you know, you got a choice to make there. Now, just to point this out again, you can reprocess this stuff, and the nuclear weapons out there, the fact that you're making, they point out here that you're making, what is it, 620,000 pounds of civilian weapons usable plutonium had been produced. Okay, so we make 620,000 pounds of weapons-grade plutonium. Let's take the weapons-grade plutonium, and instead of making bombs out of it, let's make new nuclear fuel, and let's go regenerate more nuclear energy. How's that for a plan? Instead of putting our head in the sand as the proverbial ostrich and pretend that there's no nuclear weapons in anybody else's countries and that those people over there don't know anything about nuclear. Why don't we go ahead and admit to the fact that, yep, there's a lot of nuclear weapons out there, and yep, that's a bad plan, it's a bad program, but let's get on with the program of generating electricity as cheaply and as inexpensively and as cleanly as possible. And boys and girls, I don't think coal's near as clean as nuclear. All right, going on here, they point out that the technology for producing nuclear energy that is shared among nations, particularly the process that turns raw uranium into lowly enriched uranium, can also be used to produce highly enriched weapons-grade uranium. I guess they're talking about the Iranians over there. Okay. Let's suppose that the Iranians come up with a bomb like the North Koreans did. Now, the Iranians are sitting over there with a lot of oil, and I suggest to you that they would like to sell their oil at $100 a barrel instead of burning their $100 a barrel oil to generate electricity. Now, we here in the West, I heard this said that President Bush said, you know, they got plenty of oil, they don't need nuclear. Okay, well, that's probably very true. That's like saying, well, you know, you've already got a car, you don't need a Rolls Royce. But who in the hell am I to tell you what kind of car you ought to drive? And who in the hell are we to tell the Iranians what kind of electricity they should generate? Let's put the shoe on the other foot. What if the Iranians came over here and said, listen, you Americans, you got lots of coal, you don't need nuclear, so shut down all your nuclear plants and burn coal. Just who in the hell are the Iranians to tell us how we should generate our electricity? I mean, come on, kids, let's wake up and smell the coffee here. And this gang here would probably say, well, you know, they could make nuclear weapons. Well, okay, so what? The Indians made nuclear weapons. What should we do? Go over to India and tell them people how to live their lives? What do we need? Some new bases over in India, maybe in Pakistan, maybe we need to go around the world and start policing the world and tell them how to generate their electricity now. And at some point in time, I would suggest that we mind our own business. It's a wild new concept that Americans haven't learned yet. Americans have their nose totally out of joint and up everybody else's hind end. Sniffing. If somebody does something in Africa, you got to have an American over there sniffing his hind end, finding out what he's up to and what he's doing it for. Has it ever occurred to us to just butt out, mind our own business? Let's see if we can pay our own bills and shut up for a change. And it's a wild new concept for Americans. Now, the International Atomic Energy Agency, that's the IAEA, is responsible for monitoring the world's nuclear facilities and for preventing weapons proliferation. But their safeguards have serious shortcomings. Though the IAEA is promoting additional safeguards, agreements to increase the effectiveness of their inspections, the agency acknowledges that, due to measurement uncertainties, it cannot detect all possible diversions of nuclear material. Nuclear Control Institute. So these people are opposed to nuclear energy, that is, nuclear generation of electricity, because the IAEA, the Atomic Energy Commission of the United Nations, is unable to monitor how much the Iranians are diverting from their nuclear power plant to somebody else's power plant, or to nuclear weapons. And I'm sitting here saying, so? What in the hell has that got to do with us Americans building nuclear power plants to generate electricity for ourselves? The International Atomic Energy Commission is unable to monitor the Iranians, and so we shouldn't build nuclear power plants in the United States. I would submit to you, these people have gone to college or something's happened to their mental processes. I can't see any logic in that statement at all. Zero. Maybe we should go over to Iran, nuke them, bomb them into the Stone Age so that they can't produce nuclear power for themselves. Maybe that's an option. Maybe we should do that. What in the hell's that got to do with us generating electricity for ourselves here? Going on, there's a risk of an accident. On April 26, 1986, the number 4 reactor at Chernobyl power plant in the Soviet Union, the present-day Ukraine, exploded, causing the worst nuclear accident ever. 30 people were killed instantly. Hell, more people than that are killed here in traffic accidents, for crying out loud. 30 people were killed instantly. Well, okay. 30 isn't the end of the world, is it? Including 28 from radiation exposure. 28 of the 30 were killed from radiation. Well, okay. Did you know that the average lifespan of a radiologist in the United States is 68 instead of 75? Their lifespans are shortened by 7 years. We should do away with x-rays in this country because it kills people. The radiation. Boys and girls, I would submit that we kill more people with radiation taking x-rays than we killed at Chernobyl. The hell kind of an argument is this? And a further 209 on site were treated for acute radiation poisoning. Okay. Okay. Radiation poisoning occurs, and when it occurs, it needs to be treated. Then there was an accident. The World Health Organization found that the fallout from the explosion was incredibly far-reaching. For a time, radiation levels in Scotland, over 1,400 miles away, were 10,000 times the norm. Yeah, that would be expected in an accident. Thousands of cancer deaths were a direct result of the accident. That's pure speculation. You don't know that. It's probably true. But hell, cancer is caused by radiation in this country, and we do it intentionally. Thousands of people die from radiation treatments in the United States. So what else is new? We should stop using radiation treatments because thousands of people die. That's like saying we should do away with shipping because the Titanic sank and killed 1,500 people. Listen to the next statement. The accident cost the former Soviet Union more than 3 times the economic benefits accrued from the operation of every other Soviet nuclear power plant operated between 1954 and 1990. I don't know if that statement's true or not, and it could, because the Soviet Union, they only got 31 power plants to start with. You got 31, and some of them are poorly designed. Well, as a businessman, why don't we learn from the poor design of the Russians and design ours better? And more than likely, there's going to be another accident. You know, life is life, you know, ships sink. People get killed. But, you know, using the argument here that we ought to do away with nuclear energy because 30 people got killed, we ought to do away with the aviation industry because every year 2 or 3 big airliners crash. Somewhere in the world, some airliner is going to crash and it's going to kill 100 or 200 or 300 people. My God, to avoid that, we should ground all airplanes. And if you don't agree with that, well, what in the hell are you up in arms about nuclear power? I mean, it's the safest form of power in the world. It's safer and kills fewer people than airplanes do. Automobiles. Now, these people have their heads up the wrong end here. In March of 1979, equipment failures and human error contributed to an accident at Three Mile Island nuclear reactor at Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. It's the worst such accident in U.S. history. Hell, it's the only one. We had one. Didn't kill anybody. And the consequences of the incident include radiation contamination of surrounding areas, increased cases of thyroid cancer, and plant mutations. How many people died from it? None. According to the U.S. House of Representatives Subcommittee on Oversight and Investigation, calculations of reactor accident consequences for the U.S. nuclear power plants. An accident at a U.S. nuclear power plant could kill more people than were killed by the atomic bomb dropped on Nagasaki. Now, that's probably true. Yeah, more than likely. you know, an accidental nuclear explosion. I mean, hell, you could have a SAC airliner, you know, crash and blow up, and it could happen in downtown New York, and it could kill a lot of people. You know, accidents happen. Things like that happen. What's the chances of? Pretty low. I mean, should we do away with airplanes again because there's a possibility that a U.S. Air Force plane might crash with a nuclear weapon on it? I mean, it could happen. But hell, you know, let's get over the speculation, you know, and quit acting like a bunch of old women over here wearing bonnets, you know, and platform shoes going to church, and start thinking pragmatically about how in the hell do you pay your bills? Now there's a statement they made over the best action would be their conclusion is that we ought to close down all of the nuclear reactors in the world. Okay, then when you close them down, the best action would be to cease producing nuclear energy and waste, to leave the existing waste where it is, and to immobilize it. There are a few different methods of waste immobilization. In the vitrification process, waste is combined with glass forming materials and melted. Now, once the materials solidify, the waste is trapped inside and it can't easily be released. Now, listen to this. They're saying we should take our nuclear power plants and encase them in glass and just leave them there. You know, kind of like pyramids, you know, in the Egyptian desert. Well, listen, if you could take this plutonium and you can encapsulate it in glass, well, then what the hell's the problem with storing it at Yucca Mountain, you Nevadans? For that matter, what's the problem with storing it in downtown New York City? That's number one. Number two, why would you want to take billions and billions of dollars worth of good equipment and then encapsulate it like that Chernobyl thing that they've encapsulated? And then just stop using it, I guess. You know, just quit. Okay, why don't you take your new Rolls Royce and why don't you just roll it up in mothballs and jack it up on jacks and park it in your garage and leave it there forever after you spend $150,000 buying it? Don't use it. I mean, these guys are like these nutcases that tell you that they want to tear down the Grand Coulee Dam. And I gotta ask, well, have you figured out how you're gonna generate electricity after you tore down the Grand Coulee Dam? Or did you even think about that? Or did you plan on just tear it down first and then we'll worry about the electricity next? I don't think these people are thinking the problem through. In fact, I'm not sure that they're thinking at all. The arguments that are being advanced here are juvenile at best. Juvenile at best. I think most of you can figure that out. Hey, I'm about out of time here. I'm going to have to remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. Now, for more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Remember, The Law Hour is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.